Welcome everyone to the Daily Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It's Sunday, February 1st, and we're bringing you the Commodities and Energy Edition. Look, the market's humming with a lot of nervous energy this morning, and we're here to unpack it all.
Absolutely. And it's a fascinating, almost chess-like situation, isn't it? We've got the Federal Reserve's moves, a calculated gambit impacting the entire board, and geopolitical tensions suddenly shifting pieces, creating unexpected forks in the road for commodities.
Exactly. The question everyone's asking is, how much further can this volatility stretch? We're seeing some serious risk management challenges emerge.
You know what caught my attention this week? The subtle but powerful interplay between technological disruption and investment flows. It's like observing a quiet pawn promotion, fundamentally altering the long-term strategic landscape.
I know, right? It's more than just shiny new tech. It's reshaping our understanding of critical minerals and the energy transition. I didn't realize the connection was that strong.
It's all interconnected.
Let's dive in. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. So I want to start with something that's been dominating headlines and market chatter, the potential appointment of Kevin Warsh to chair the Federal Reserve. It's a scenario that's got economists and investors alike on edge, and for good reason. It's not just about policy disagreements, it's about a potential shift in the very foundations of how the Fed operates. Alex, let's dive in. What's the core concern here beyond the obvious partisan divide?
The core concern, Maya, stems from a pattern of behavior, really. Warsh's career trajectory demonstrates a remarkable adaptability to prevailing political winds. He shifted criticisms of the Fed from money supply inflation to asset price bubbles, and then to backdoor fiscal policy. It suggests a prioritization of political alignment over consistent economic analysis. It's unsettling to consider a potential Fed chair whose policy views seem contingent on the administration in power.
Right. And the breaking some heads comment. That wasn't exactly reassuring for those who value the Fed's collaborative, consensus-driven approach. It speaks to a willingness to disrupt, but without necessarily a clear roadmap. The Oddlots podcast highlighted this, a significant obstacle to immediate persuasive power within the FOMC. Is that a fatal flaw for a Fed chair?
It's certainly a substantial hurdle. Persuasion within the FOMC is paramount, and that requires building consensus, not dictating terms. Warsh's history suggests a less collaborative style, potentially leading to gridlock and policy paralysis, particularly during a crisis. It's like performing a complex surgical procedure with a scalpel that keeps slipping. Precision becomes incredibly difficult.
That's a very apt metaphor, Alex, the surgical scalpel. The precision required is extraordinary. But let's look at the current economic context. We're running about a percentage point above the Fed's inflation target. How does Warsh's past stance on QE and his criticisms of the balance sheet factor into this? The Bloomberg Surveillance podcast mentioned tariffs driving inflation. How does that complicate things?
It's a crucial point. Warsh's previous criticisms of QE, even when those criticisms proved inaccurate, are now somewhat out of sync with current market conditions. Money market rates are converging with the Fed funds rate, signaling a need for greater liquidity. He'd likely be compelled to moderate his stance, but the question is whether that moderation would be genuine or merely tactical. And regarding tariffs, they are a persistent, complicating factor, making it harder to assess underlying inflationary pressures. They're a surgical scar that continues to influence the patient's health.
And the podcast pointed out the oddity of Warsh's views shifting towards dovishness since 2016, coinciding with the Trump presidency. Does that suggest a lack of consistent economic judgment?
It certainly raises questions. While policy views can evolve, a demonstrable history of advocating for certain policies independently of political pressure is crucial for establishing credibility. Warsh's shift, coupled with his past pronouncements, creates a black box around his current economic reasoning. We simply don't have a clear, data-supported macroeconomic outlook from him.
The Bloomberg Surveillance broadcast also mentioned Senator Tilley's blocking the confirmation. How much of a political headache is that going to be, and does it fundamentally change the dynamics?
It adds a significant layer of complexity. Tilley's demands for resolution of the DOJ investigation and the Supreme Court case effectively create a procedural hurdle that outweighs concerns about finding the perfect candidate. It suggests that political considerations are driving the process more than economic expertise. And it potentially delays the appointment, leaving the Fed in a state of uncertainty.
The Oddlots podcasts consistently emphasize the importance of data-driven decision-making. Are there specific instances in Warsh's past where he demonstrably prioritized data over politics? Neil Dutta expressed skepticism about his repeated passing over and Wall Street Journal op-eds.
That's precisely the challenge. While he's made contributions to economic discourse, his track record lacks that consistent, data-driven reasoning outside of political contexts. The frequent op-eds, while showcasing his views, don't necessarily demonstrate a rigorous analytical process. The focus seems to be on shaping the narrative rather than presenting a nuanced, evidence-based argument.
And what about the role of Ron Lauder and his Republican donations? The Bloomberg surveillance discussion highlighted that connection. Does that raise legitimate concerns about potential political influence?
Absolutely. While influence doesn't necessarily equate to corruption, the connections raise questions about potential allegiances and motivations. It's a perception issue, and perception matters greatly when it comes to the Fed's independence. It fuels the narrative that political considerations are outweighing economic expertise.
The Unhedged podcast touched on the weaker dollar and global trust issues. Do you see any connection between a potential Warsh appointment and the dollar's trajectory?
I think there's a strong connection. Perceived lack of independence at the Fed could further erode trust in the dollar, accelerating the shift towards alternative reserve currencies. The current dollar depreciation, as noted by Bloomberg surveillance, isn't just a currency fluctuation. It reflects a deeper, evolving lack of trust in the United States globally.
So putting it all together, what's your prediction for the near future? Assuming Warsh gets confirmed, what's the most likely scenario for the Fed's policy path?
My prediction is that we'll see a more hawkish Fed than many currently anticipate, at least initially. Warsh's emphasis on fiscal discipline and his past criticisms of QE could lead to a slower pace of rate cuts and a more cautious approach to balance sheet normalization. However, the Supreme Court rulings regarding the president's ability to dismiss Fed members introduce a critical constraint. He'll need to build consensus within the FOMC, and that will require a degree of flexibility and compromise that his past behavior doesn't necessarily suggest.
So a cautious, potentially gridlocked Fed, navigating a complex economic landscape with a significant perception challenge. A daunting prospect. This trend will be important to monitor, particularly the interplay between political pressures and the Fed's independence. That captures the essence of what's happening in this space. So let's dive into something that's been dominating headlines and impacting portfolios, geopolitical risk and commodity markets. It's a tangled web, isn't it?
Indeed. It's far more than just simple supply and demand now. It's a complex interplay of policy decisions, security concerns, and the shifting sands of global power dynamics. The Odd Lots podcast with Jeff Curry really highlighted that, the idea that we're entering a commodity supercycle driven by factors beyond just economic growth.
Exactly. It's not just about China's growth rate anymore. We're seeing de-dollarization efforts, emerging market stockpiling, and even tech companies, these hyperscalers, investing in physical infrastructure. It's blurring the lines between asset-light and asset-heavy models. They're building data centers and even considering nuclear power. That's a seismic shift in investment patterns.
Precisely. And Curry's point about capital investment being the primary constraint, not necessarily physical supply, is crucial. We're seeing this bubbly market where demand is there, but the willingness to invest in new supply is lagging, creating volatility. It's almost as though the market is a beautifully illuminated manuscript, each geopolitical event adding a new, intricate border, disrupting the flow and making it difficult to see the whole picture. Each border, meticulously rendered, represents a new sanction, a trade restriction, or a security concern, adding complexity and potentially obscuring the underlying narrative of supply and demand.
I love that analogy, Alex. Beautifully put. And it's not just metals, is it? The Macro Voices discussion with Justin Hoon really underscored the uranium market's precarious position. Kazakhstan, with its 40% of global supply facing potential tax hikes, is a huge vulnerability.
Absolutely. And the shift in utility behavior towards smaller, more frequent RFPs, it's a sign of a tightening market, a willingness to pay higher prices driven by the scarcity of supply. The Sprott Physical Uranium Trust actions alone are amplifying this upward trend. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy almost.
It's fascinating to see how central banks are diversifying out of Western bonds and into precious metals, too. That's a clear signal of a loss of faith in the traditional financial system, isn't it? And it's adding fuel to the fire.
It is.
And the Argus Media insights on South Korea's LNG market demonstrate how even seemingly localized geopolitical events, like tensions around Taiwan, can ripple through global commodity flows. The diversion of LNG carriers to South Korea, exploiting micro-forecasts, showcases a new level of agility and opportunistic trading.
The fertilizer markets, as highlighted by Argus, are equally sensitive. Brazil's dependence on Chinese AMSOL and the potential for supply disruptions there is a major concern. And the fact that delayed planting could lead to a significant reduction in demand, that's a complex dynamic.
And then there's the situation in Venezuela and Ukraine, as detailed in the Odd Lots discussion. Operating in those environments requires a whole different skill set, building trust, prioritizing reliability, and being prepared for anything. It's not for the faint of heart. The fact that Cargill was providing basic food supplies to its employees in Venezuela underscores just how severe the economic collapse was.
Absolutely. And the Brazilian diesel market, the return of Russian diesel, the interplay of sanctions, and the reselling of U.S. cargoes, it's a microcosm of the broader geopolitical tensions at play. The Argus market talks really laid that out. The fact that distributors are actively avoiding cargoes linked to sanctions, that's a huge compliance risk factor.
The potential for U.S. investment in Venezuelan oil, even with the global energy transition, is a wild card. It could significantly disrupt supply chains and pricing dynamics. It's a long game, though, likely 5-15 years down the line.
And let's not forget the war on free trade. It's not just a talking point, it's a tangible driver of commodity demand and stockpiling. Companies are reshoring production, duplicating infrastructure, it's inflating prices across the board.
Indeed. The point that the fundamental driver of commodity price movements is physical supply and demand, making it more predictable in the long run than equity markets, offers a degree of comfort amidst the short-term volatility.
So what do we watch closely in the coming months? I think the enforcement actions by the EU Customs Authority regarding origin claims are critical. And we need to see how permanent these feedstock shifts by Asian refiners will be.
I agree. Monitoring the U.S. government's actions regarding strategic uranium reserves and any potential intervention in uranium sales will be vital. And of course, keeping a close eye on Kazakhstan's tax policies and their impact on global uranium supply. It's a truly interconnected system.
This trend will be important to monitor. It's a volatile and unpredictable landscape, but understanding these geopolitical forces is crucial for navigating the commodity markets. Those are the key forces shaping this landscape. So now moving on to our next topic, technological disruption and investment. It seems like every week, a new AI tool or platform is promising to revolutionize an industry. But which of these disruptions are actually going to translate into real investment opportunities, and which are just hype?
Well, the sheer volume of activity is certainly dizzying. But what's particularly interesting, considering the discussions in Bloomberg Surveillance and War on the Rocks, is the divergence in perspectives. The Bloomberg folks are incredibly optimistic about job creation, while the military strategists are focused on the potential for vulnerabilities.
Exactly. And the Bloomberg panel, particularly Brian Weiser, really hammered home the parallels with the ad tech industry. Initially, automation seemed like a job killer, but it actually created more roles due to the complexity it introduced. Do you see that playing out across other sectors?
I do, and it's crucial to remember that AI isn't replacing everything. As Nancy Lazar pointed out, it's re-accelerating the economy, potentially pushing nominal GDP to 6 or 7%. That's a massive shift, and it's going to require a significant investment in infrastructure, from data centers to energy grids. It's a tectonic shift, really. Like a slow-motion caldera buildup, immense pressure accumulates, unseen for years, until it finally erupts, reshaping the landscape. That's what we're seeing with AI, a latent force, now unleashing transformative energy.
Beautifully put. And that brings us directly to the energy sector, which Columbia Energy Exchange highlighted. The surge in electricity demand driven by AI, EVs, and data centers is putting immense strain on the grid. It's not just about building new power plants, it's about upgrading transmission infrastructure, which seems to be a massive bottleneck.
Precisely. And it's not just a matter of capacity, it's about resilience. General Dubchala, in his discussion with War on the Rocks, emphasized the need for adaptability and innovation, drawing parallels with the Ukrainian Air Force's resilience against a technologically superior adversary. We need to be thinking about distributed energy resources, microgrids, and smart grid technologies to handle these fluctuations in demand.
Absolutely. And the investment opportunities are enormous. Beyond the obvious tech plays, think about companies involved in battery storage, grid modernization, and even cybersecurity for these critical infrastructure assets. But what about the potential downsides? The Bloomberg panel touched on rising political anger and polarization, potentially impacting policy decisions.
That's a critical point. The correlation between anger and anti-immigration free trade sentiments is deeply concerning. If that translates into protectionist policies or regulatory hurdles, it could significantly stifle investment and slow down the adoption of these new technologies. We saw that with Tesla's EV sales, where regulatory changes impacted their projected adoption rate.
And let's not forget the potential for disruption in the software sector itself, as highlighted in the Bloomberg Surveillance podcast. AI and open source technologies are eroding the value proposition of traditional software companies. Microsoft, Amazon, and Google are likely to dominate the cloud market, but smaller players need to adapt or risk becoming obsolete.
Indeed, IBM's software performance exceeding expectations demonstrates that adaptation is possible. They've been aggressively acquiring companies and integrating AI into their offerings. However, the OpenAI dependency highlighted in the instant reaction earnings roundup for Microsoft is a long-term risk. Their IP rights expire in 2032. They'll need to develop their own competitive LLMs or face obsolescence.
That's a sobering thought. So looking ahead, what's one concrete prediction you'd make about the intersection of technological disruption and investment?
I think we're going to see a significant shift in private credit markets. As Paul Sweeney pointed out, liquidity varies dramatically. The more resilient assets, particularly those backed by AI-driven infrastructure, will attract capital, while others will struggle. It's going to be a flight to quality, driven by a growing awareness of the risks associated with this rapid technological transformation.
That makes sense. And what about the SpaceX IPO? The potential for 15-20% retail investor allocation is significant.
It's a landmark event, but also a potential volatility trigger. Investor confidence in Elon Musk's ambitious projections will be paramount. Tesla's stock performance is a clear example of how narrative can outweigh fundamentals.
So the bottom line here is that technological disruption is creating both unprecedented opportunities and significant risks. The key to successful investment will be identifying companies that are not only embracing AI, but also adapting to the evolving geopolitical and regulatory landscape.
That's right. And recognizing that the shift isn't simply about adopting new technologies, but fundamentally reshaping the economic and social fabric. That's where the truly transformative investments lie. Those are the key forces shaping this landscape.
So let's dive into a topic that's been dominating headlines and investment strategies: financial market volatility and risk management. It feels like we're in a perpetual state of uncertainty, doesn't it?
Indeed. The confluence of macroeconomic pressures, geopolitical risks, and shifting investor sentiment has created a truly volatile environment. What's particularly striking is the nuanced approach institutions are taking to hedging their exposure, as detailed in the Macro Trading Floor podcast. It's not simply about divesting from U.S. assets, it's about strategically utilizing futures and derivatives.
Exactly. Pension funds, for instance, are hedging dollar exposure while maintaining exposure to the Mag 7. It's a fascinatingly complex risk mitigation strategy. And what about the potential appointment of Reeder at the Fed? That's clearly a key uncertainty.
Reeder's potential focus on using the Fed balance sheet to actively manage yields, targeting a 3% funds rate and 4% 10-year, is a game changer. The podcast highlighted viewing this through the lens of yield management, rather than just the Fed funds rate itself. It suggests a more aggressive, unconventional monetary policy approach. It's almost a Hegelian dialectic at play. The thesis of traditional monetary policy is being challenged by the antithesis of yield targeting, and the synthesis will shape the market landscape.
A very apt metaphor, Alex. You've managed to weave in the philosophical with the financial. So beyond the Fed, what's concerning you most about the current environment? Credit Crunch Beach Points Hunsaker on structured landscape raised some red flags, specifically regarding the FHFA's MBS purchases.
Precisely. That's created a shockwave in both agency and non-agency markets, leaving many wondering who the consistent buyer will be beyond the GSEs, banks, and the Fed. It has fundamentally altered the risk-reward calculus. And the proposed credit card APR cap, a potentially significant risk to specialty finance firms.
Absolutely. And it's not just regulatory risks. Unhedged pointed out the potential for a correction if the stock market takes a downturn, forcing leveraged investors to liquidate. It's a sobering thought.
It is.
And the retail investor participation, as Unhedged noted, is creating a meme stock dynamic in silver. That's a volatile mix. The sheer velocity of silver's price increase, coupled with the relatively small free float, is inherently unsustainable.
Agreed. Let's bring it back to the broader picture. Bloomberg Surveillance mentioned a potential bubble forming over the next 1-2 years, despite current market anxieties. Do you see that as a realistic scenario?
It's a distinct possibility. Grisanti's comparison to the late 1990s, emphasizing the potential for profits during the bubble-building phase, is worth considering. A tactical approach might involve acknowledging the risks while strategically participating.
So the bottom line here is that navigating this volatile landscape requires a nuanced, multifaceted approach, hedging strategically, assessing regulatory risks, and acknowledging the potential for correction. We need to keep a very close eye on central bank policy and retail investor sentiment.
Absolutely. This trend will be important to monitor as the year progresses. It's a fascinating, albeit precarious, moment in financial markets.
That captures the essence of what's happening in this space. So now moving on to our next topic, energy transition and critical minerals. It's a sprawling theme, but essential to understanding the future of global economies. Alex, let's start with the obvious. Everyone's talking about copper. What's the biggest takeaway from these reports regarding its role?
The sheer scale of projected demand is staggering, Maya. We're looking at 42 million metric tons by 2040, with half of that driven by the energy transition, including the explosion of AI data centers. The projected supply deficit, 10 million tons, is frankly alarming. It's a critical vulnerability in the 17-year timeline to bring a new mine online. Well, that's a checkmate on the board, isn't it? A very slow, deliberate checkmate.
A good analogy. Speaking of slow, South Korea's coal phase-out by 2040 is looking increasingly shaky, isn't it? The Argus report highlighted their continued reliance on coal imports, even with government restrictions. A strategic vulnerability, they called it.
Precisely. It demonstrates a short-term pragmatism overriding long-term decarbonization goals. It's like a chess player sacrificing a pawn to protect a more valuable piece, a temporary concession to maintain stability. The hydrogen vehicle budget cut further underscores this cautious reassessment, a shift away from aggressive deployment to a more targeted approach.
And then there's the battery landscape. The Faraday Institution report highlights the UK's strategic opportunity around LFP batteries specifically. It's fascinating how they're prioritizing cost and supply chain resilience over performance characteristics, decoupling themselves from global trends.
Absolutely. It's a deliberate decoupling and a smart one. It acknowledges the geopolitical realities, particularly China's dominance in cathode and anode production. That's 80% and 90% respectively. Securing domestic LFP production is a move to diversify and build resilience, potentially capturing export opportunities down the line.
The beverage industry's shift to recycled PET is another interesting piece of the puzzle, isn't it? A coordinated push towards circular economy principles. In Korea Zinc's rare earth element recycling partnership, it's a nascent advantage they're building.
Yes, it showcases a broader trend towards sustainability, which is becoming a competitive differentiator. It's not just about meeting regulations, it's about creating a more resilient and resource-efficient industrial base. We're seeing a move from reactive compliance to proactive value creation.
So if we're looking ahead, what's the biggest risk and the biggest opportunity in this space?
The biggest risk remains the permitting delays for new mines. That's a human-controlled bottleneck, and streamlining that process is crucial. The opportunity, I believe, lies in technological innovation within mining itself, automation and efficiency gains. But that requires substantial upfront investment and a willingness to embrace new technologies.
And given the current geopolitical climate, how do you see the US-South Korea trade dynamics playing out? The report mentioned anti-dumping investigations.
It's a fragmented landscape, requiring a very granular sector-specific trade strategy. South Korea needs to navigate these complexities carefully. If they can successfully foster their LFP battery industry and circular economy initiatives, they'll be well positioned to weather these trade tensions. This will be crucial to watch as the energy transition accelerates.
So, listening back across these diverse topics, the Fed's potential shift, the commodity markets wrestling with geopolitical forces, the disruptive potential of AI, the inherent volatility in financial markets, and the ongoing energy transition, what strikes me most isn't the individual complexity, but the accelerating interconnectedness of it all. It's almost as though we're witnessing a system-wide feedback loop, where a change in one area rapidly reverberates across the others.
Precisely. And if we draw a parallel to classical architecture, we see a similar dynamic at play in a Roman aqueduct. Each arch, seemingly independent, relies on the precise engineering of the others to support the entire structure. A weakness in one arch destabilizes the whole. Similarly, the Fed's actions impact commodity pricing, which then influences inflation, which in turn affects technological investment. It's a cascading effect. The apparent independence of each sector is, in reality, a carefully calibrated interdependence.
You're right to bring up the aqueduct analogy, Alex. It's incredibly apt. Thinking about the potential Warsh appointment at the Fed, for example, it's not just about monetary policy. It's about the perceived independence of the institution, which directly influences global trust in the dollar, impacting commodity flows, and ultimately the pace of the energy transition. The Bloomberg surveillance discussion on tariffs further complicates this. They're essentially structural cracks in the Roman arch, constantly undermining stability.
And the relentless push towards technological disruption, particularly in AI, acts as both a potential keystone and a source of instability. It promises unprecedented productivity gains, fueling nominal GDP growth, but it also introduces new vulnerabilities, cybersecurity risks, regulatory uncertainty, and the potential for job displacement. The Columbia Energy Exchange's point about grid modernization is crucial. It highlights the infrastructural limitations that could throttle the very progress AI promises.
So if we're connecting the dots, what's the single most important thing listeners should be watching in the coming months? It's not just any one data point, but the response to unexpected shocks. The FHFA's actions in the mortgage-backed securities market, for example, demonstrated how quickly the system can shift.
I agree. And I'd add that we need to monitor the willingness of governments to adapt regulatory frameworks to these rapidly evolving realities. The South Korea example, prioritizing LFP batteries despite broader decarbonization goals, demonstrates a pragmatic approach that could become a model for others. The key isn't necessarily predicting the next disruption, but anticipating how institutions will react when the unexpected occurs. We're entering an era of adaptive resilience, not predictable certainty.
That's a powerful and insightful observation, Alex. The shift from predictable systems to adaptive resilience. It's a truly complex and fascinating time to be navigating these markets. It's clear that the interplay of these forces will continue to shape the global economy for years to come.
Indeed. And it's a privilege to unpack these complexities with you, Maya. It's a landscape that demands constant vigilance and a willingness to challenge conventional wisdom.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us on Daily Digest. We'll be back next week with another deep dive into the world of commodities and energy. Until then, stay informed and stay curious.